Welcome to Free Kick, the AFLW Fantasy Podcast. My name is Mel, and today I'm joined by Liam and Jono. Jono, how's it going? What was your highlight from the weekend?
Oh, well, I mean, the weekend's highlight has to be the wedding that we went to of our dear co-host Will. But I think if we're talking footy, I got to watch the Hawks take on the bar in the competition right now in Adelaide. And honestly, we did get dominated for one quarter. But we matched them for the other three. It was literally just that one quarter. We lost by 26 points, and that ended up being the final margin. So the Hawks are not that far off it.
Yeah, Hawks are having a good season so far.
I'm hoping we can beat Saints next week, the other undefeated team of the competition.
I was just about to say, you called Adelaide the cream of the crop at the moment, but St Kilda are on top of the ladder.
Yeah, look, I'm taking last season into account, but...
Outrageous.
It's a fair call. It's a fair call.
We were doing our like predictions of the ladder before the season started, and I don't think anyone would have considered that 3 weeks in, it's Hawks and St Kilda are the undefeated teams.
Well,
so
yeah,
up until this week. With the one very sad loss. Very sad. But
true. Good point.
Liam and I were talking about this before the game happened, though, and it's hard to find a matchup for Danielle Ponta. She's too good. She's too good.
Indeed. And Liam, what was your highlight from the weekend?
Well, obviously I can't say that the wedding wasn't, because it would be both untrue but look extremely callous if I were to suggest that it was anything else. What was my highlight from the week? Look, I do just love watching Charlie Rowbottom. There's something so entertaining about the way that she goes about things. So I'll run with that.
I like it. The way she just pushes people off is just fantastic. She had someone on every limb for one of those.
Oh, that was ridiculous.
There, and she just like shook them all off like they were bugs and charged on ahead.
And to be doing that on like Elise Parker as well, who's like the other strong midfielder in the comp, it's crazy.
Crazy. Well, no Will today because he left on his honeymoon this afternoon, which is very exciting. And, you know, highlight of the weekend, yes, obviously the wedding. It was great to be one of his groom's people. That was a thoroughly enjoyable experience for me. But off the back of that, feeling a bit sorry for myself and had a bit of alone time and quiet time this weekend. So I did not go to any games, but I sat on the couch for 10 plus hours watching footy, and it was great. Very relaxing, got to see a lot of the games. And that was my highlight, you know, just in soaking up all of the AFLW. Well, actually, maybe my other highlight, if we move over to the shipping report, was that I've had a decent week. But we're going to start in reverse order. And Jono, as the best man slash crewmate of Will, who can't make it here, how did Will go this week?
Look, I'm sure he's going to look back on this wedding as the happiest of his life. But I can tell you it was not a good fantasy side performance. He had two late outs across the weekend at a time when he was not looking at his phone. Ash McCarthy and Cynthia Hamilton. So rubbish luck. And so he ended up putting up a 1,153 to be our lowest scorer of the round.
Could be worse. And we won't be hearing from Will for a little while because he's honeymooning. So he's going to come back. I don't know if he's going to do any trades for the next month. He's going to come back to a shocker regardless. But we'll see how he goes when he comes back. And then that's followed by Liam.
Yeah, I scored 1,209, which puts me down 291 ranks from last week. Bit disappointing. Sorry, it was actually 1,207 because we had that late update to Michaela Pounga. So minus, lost a handball down to 33, which is just great for on field. Yeah, definitely a bad week, particularly for my defense where... as we'll talk about it in a minute, I had the best defender of the weekend sitting somewhere not on field.
Well, I mean, let's hear it. Good call, bad call, blindside.
Yeah, so, well, I'll jump straight into it then. So my good call, I would have said, was making the call to go O'Dowd at R1. She scored a 68. I still think there's more upside for her there. Lauren Bella is notoriously difficult to ruck against. And... given that Edmonds scored at or one below what O'Dowd had scored, I think I definitely come off a winner given how much cash I was then able to use elsewhere on my field. My bad call, Yeah, there's some real tough ones. There's definitely something to be said for not looking at the weather report when picking Zali Friswell, because that game was in some horrendous conditions, and playing out on a wing, she definitely got trapped out there, and ball movement was pretty horrendous. And then, like, yeah, I definitely think there's something to be said for trading in Celine Moody when Emily Fiedler looks like she might have been the better play. And then I'm blindsided by...
You traded in Moody.
Yeah, I did. I wanted the job security. So I traded in Celine Moody as my bench ruck, just because I'm concerned during these bye rounds we might not have a whole lot of flexibility to cover if Farah Dowd is out. I'd like to have someone there who can score and who I expect to play every single game. So that's why I went with that. And then my blindside was bloody Serene Watson, 96, in the role that she played in the practice match and was the reason that I picked her. And then she just rolls out, you know, two awful scores and an awful game plan. So, yeah, that was very, very frustrating to see that I benched her because I did not think that she had that in her. I didn't trust St Kilda to roll that out every week.
Ye of little faith, Liam. We saw it in the practice game. We knew it was in there.
But John, did you?
It hasn't seen it once in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it
was, correct. It was so thank fun. You.
Oh, gosh. Well, Jono, you're up next.
Yeah, I'm riding my high horse a little bit on Liam this week because thanks to having players like Watson on my field, I put up a 1,291 this week, which has moved me up to 660th, which I'm pretty happy with, up 890 from last week. So very, very happy. Mm. I think my good call is really just it's the defense as a whole line because, you know, in week one, I think my highest defender score was a Ruby Slasher. I just had nothing going on back there. It was a very depressing looking line. And this week I had Beck Webster brought in for an 80. I had Watson on field for a 93 or 96 in the end. I think
damn.
It was one of those two. It was it was pretty exciting. My bad call was I made a last minute switch in my trades that allowed me to get to Webster, but it also meant that I held Sashi Syme. I ended up fielding her over Goody, and that cost me about 50 points in the end. So it's turned what, you know, what could have been a great round into a good round.
The Sashi Syme, like, move on field was one that I'd definitely been contemplating. And I think she was on, like, 11 after 3 or 4 minutes. And this is with me having traded in Benici for a 60, and I'm sitting there going, oh, for Pete's sake, like, you're kidding me. And then she barely saw the ball after that point, like, could not get her hands on it. Maria Maloney touched it a million times.
Well, I think occasionally she got her hands on it, but I think I saw her get tackled about 7 times, and it was like, just get the hands free, just once.
As someone that was watching that, knowing I have every other Port cheap player and not Syme, I was very satisfied to see that she was doing a lot of work around the ball and not touching it. Every time she didn't touch it, I was like, yes.
Lastly,
but what about your blindside?
My blindside, yeah. So this is one that we looked in the practice games and all the preseason match sims that they had at Maddie Geeran for a long time. And, you know, she had the role in the midfield, but she just didn't look up to it. She was very slow. She was kind of just not getting her hands on the footy all the time. But against Geelong, wow, 116. I did not see that coming. I'm very strongly looking at trading her in if unless Liam, I suppose, can talk me out of it, given the look on his face. But it's certainly something I'm looking at.
I think that game was just so weird. Like, look, having watched it intently, and it was one of the worst performances I've ever seen from Geelong in 3 seasons.
They were woeful. And yeah, there's very few players that can put their hand up after that to say they played well.
I doubt there would be any at all. Like, it was a pretty woeful performance. And I think that the wind and the rain and the number of times the ball just fell to Mads was ridiculous. I think she had like 4 marks and 3 of them were intercepts, all inside like 65 meters from goal. Like, they were just, that was just the kind of game that it was. It was ridiculous.
It's just how cheap she is, you know? I mean, she started in the 300s. We're recording this before lockout is lifted, so we don't know her final price. But I mean, even if she goes up 100K, she's still going to be priced in the 50s. You know, there's so much to go.
That's her highest score ever. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, it's a.
If she was to average 70 from here, she would still make money. You know,
yeah,
it's not a concern.
It's more just like, if it's just a question of you feeling her.
I got to say, though, I was quite sad because I thought I had had my last time of saying gearing up for a big one when she stopped being fantasy relevant in the last two rounds. And I'm very happy that I can now whip that one back out again every episode. Sorry,
keep
listeners.
Keep it going.
And sorry to you.
Run
guys.
It back.
So then I guess next up is me. Bowers down to me. Had a pretty good week. 1305. I am in the top 1,000 for the first time this season, which is exciting. I'm up to rank 725 after moving up an impressive 12,000 or so spots this week.
1,200.
So we'll take that.
That would
oh,
be wild.
Yeah, sorry, 1,200. 12,000 instead of 15,000 people
yeah.
playing.
Jeez, that would be insanely impressive.
Well, it would also speak to how bad I would have been doing before.
Hey,
but
this is
okay.
The second time you've top scored for out of the four of us in 3 weeks.
There's a strong correlation between me getting the top score and me being on the podcast. So, you know, maybe I'm just a sore winner. I only come to brag. That's definitely not true.
Dobbing on yourself there, Mel.
That's okay. That's what I'm here for. My good calls this week were chucking a couple of my pods on field. So I did a trade from Hosking out because I wasn't liking that new role to bring Sheeran in for her first game of the season. And I wasn't really that present last week, so I don't know why everyone didn't do this or if there was some red flag. But a 66, decent price, was happy with that.
Yeah, I definitely think it was just the time on ground factor. I got the sense that she would probably be on managed minutes, given that at the beginning of the week when they said that she was a test for this week, and like, oh, she will need to get through training, but we're hopeful and confident that she'll play. That just says to me that like there's still probably some boxes to tick and they'll take a cautious approach to her time on ground. And I feel like that's what we saw.
Yeah, 61%, but pulled out a 66. So I'll take that because it also saved me the poor score from Hosking. So liked that. And then also Bresnahan with a 53, but only 2.9% owned. So also pretty happy with that because I was a bit iffy on that one last week. But then also Riddell. His North Melbourne play is coming through for me. Riddell, top score of the round, 145. That really saved me, I've got to say. My bad call was, for the third time in a row, putting the wrong Port Adelaide midfielder on field. I was literally like, you did it wrong the first week, you did it wrong the second week. Think about what you want to do and then do the opposite of that, because otherwise it's going to end badly. And it ended badly anyway. I had Window on field for 53 and then Goody on the bench for 74 and, okay, Wendland, because I have three, so it makes it even harder. Wendland for 52. So one of them, if I only have one, I can't keep making this mistake. So someone's going for, you know, cashing in, but also so that I can't be my own worst enemy.
Yeah. If it helps, Mel, I mean, at least the 53 is only 20 points away from Goody as opposed to a 27 from Sashi Syme. Could have been worse.
Yeah.
You had three of the better
options.
Could
have been worse. That's true. And the blind side was the late McCarthy out, which wasn't that shocking. I mean, I don't have her, but it was the impact that that had. To see Miller still playing forward and having those quick little attempts at goal rather than stopping, taking your time, converting a goal, why are you forward when you've got no midfielders left at Freo with Stannett, Bowers, and then McCarthy out? I mean, she did go forward in the end and it was great. She was doing her Miller thing. Love to see it. But then also Strom being able to step up and have such a huge week. I mean, we've seen two massive scores, massively impactful games from her. I'm really liking Strom, not just as a ruck, but just as like a midfielder for Freo. So yeah, that was my exciting blindside.
It's her tackling that's really gone to another level and taking five marks, which is more than any other player on the ground.
She's got the height. And I mean, Freo need the height. So she's got the height there, but she's also got the ability to tackle. Then she gets hit outs as well. She's just, I'm loving it. Yeah, so that's my blindside. That's a nice positive one. And then you'd think, oh, okay, that was a pretty good score. We've done well. But no, we have once again been outshined by the Tamara Smith of it all, which is currently sitting 256th in the competition, which is wild.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it's doing so well.
If only it was actually my team. It's so much better.
Yeah, can't you just substitute over and pretend that was your team the whole time?
And I still traded him for as well, for a 48.
Yeah, Liam, run the sort quickly.
Yeah, so trades this week, downgraded Jess Allen to bring O'Dowd on field. Hosking went across to Beth Schilling, and then Ellie McKenzie became Ali Anderson. So lost points on the trades. But Hartill was a good in, scored a 48. I definitely think she was a good play instead of going for someone like Cleaver. Ellie McKenzie had a great week, which is interesting. She had, you know, another impactful performance, but had done the same last week and scored really badly. But it just helps to have Noffy, Rowbottom, Riddell, Goody on field, you know, all the key forwards, all the key defenders, and not having Hosking. So that definitely helps.
That'll do it. Well, watch and wait scoreboard. Who wants to run us through this in Will's absence?
Jono, I feel like you've not done it yet, so I think this is your go.
Oh,
yeah. Jono's like, no.
No, under no circumstances. No, that's all right. Well, look, top coach, we have the team from second place last week. Maz Rovers had the sixth highest score of the round, a 1,417, to jump into first spot. So that is the person to beat, and I think they are up by quite a margin at the moment, maybe 100 points or so. So
they are up by 130 points.
Yeah, very impressive. I think that's going to take some catching for the rest of us. But one person who is doing that very, very well is the team Mohawk with a 1,509 this round, which is a good 80 points better than the next team. It is a wild team looking at it. I think this is seriously impressive. They had Mim Strom as their captain, which is just, I can't imagine it not being a midfielder. This is such a unique choice.
It's gobsmacking.
Yeah. And finally, I suppose if you wanted to stay even with top 100, top 100th spot moved 1,267 this week to be sitting on 3,997 total points. So Fossils Fantasy and a handful of other coaches are currently sitting on that 100th spot right now.
And we can't do free kick league update because, like we said earlier, the lockout is not lifted, so I can't see settled scores.
Yes, we are still refreshing as we record, but we'll see how that goes. So, hot topics this week. We've got the double game week strategies. Got some questions for you guys. Figure out how on earth we're going to get through that. Trade targets and rookie roulette, but not who we're going to trade in, who we're cashing out mostly, which is quite exciting. In terms of double game week strategies, I've got a few questions. I wasn't on the pod last week. I'm not really thinking about this up until now. But for our trades this week, how much are you focusing on players that have a double in week four? Like, is this going to be the center of your trades? Or are you still going to be working on players that you want otherwise or cash gen options?
Yeah, so I guess to start with, I see this as the final round that you can make regular trades because every player that you trade in is going to have a double game ahead of them. So I think the priority here for me is I'm just going to make sure I have enough players that I'm comfortable moving forward with for this round. I think I've got five players in my team currently that have the double week. And so I think from that point, I'll probably make sure that I have enough that I can only trade those types of players out and keep cycling forward through the season. So I think my priorities this week on my trades are more that I've got a balance across all of the rounds to come and that I am saving a little bit of cash to make sure I can do the upgrades for next week.
Yeah, I think I have a similar approach. I would just say, though, that it does, that there's a little bit of kind of bet hedging going on with your trades, which is if you are going to bring players in, preferable to bring in players with earlier buys because for whatever reason you may need to trade those players out. And if you are in a position where you need to trade them out, then at the very least you will be trading then almost certainly into a player who is yet to have a double game week. So you're essentially adding an extra one to your team over the buys. I also think that, like, if I've got Jess Hosking, for example, if I'm looking to trade her out, I probably will be wanting to keep at least either bringing in a round four option directly or another round four player as well to make sure that I have at least five, because that's what I've currently got at the minute.
Yeah.
And I do think as well, like, I brought in Britt Bonici this week as a potential captain option, given the matchups that she has against the Eagles and the Bulldogs. But if I were not to have a captain option, I would be making it a far larger priority.
It's really interesting you say that, because we're coming at this from very different perspectives. I have one player in the bye weeks.
Ooh.
Being Slicer.
Wow.
I have no Bulldogs players. I have no West Coast players because I traded out Sheeran, which I stand by. And I have no, what's the other one?
Hosking. Traded Hosking.
It doesn't sound like you have any Brisbane players either.
No, because I traded out Hodder.
Yeah.
For Friswell. Oops. So I will be trading in for week four is my priority at the moment. But I also like the idea of not thinking too far ahead. And that's probably why I had a good week this week, because I wasn't necessarily thinking about round four, because I am afraid that there's going to be last minute injuries, last minute outs. So I could have a player that I brought in 2 weeks early with the intention of like copying a few bad scores, but holding them for the double. But then if something happens to them, I'm just going to have to redo that trade later and I'm going to be annoyed. So I'm like, I'm just going to deal with the week that comes as it comes and do the trades just in time for that and hope that I don't have to do any big last minute emergencies. But that way I might not be like undoing a trade that I did in advance because something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
So that means week four is like the biggest focus of my trades. So you're talking more about like players that you really like. Does that mean that you're picking players that you think are going to be top five finishers that you intend to hold for the rest of the season now? Or are you still kind of just thinking shorter term?
I think for the moment, I'm still focusing on players that are going to outperform their price, because I think we've still got a long way before we can get to a full line of premiums. I'm kind of looking at the next 4 weeks as one large round, and I'm hoping that by the end of it, I'm at the point that I have all premium players. But across the next 4 weeks, I still want to be making sure that I'm upgrading, which is half the challenge of this, is that you've got to have the right rookies and the right mid prices to be moving on throughout these buys, which is going to be a challenge.
Well, then question for you, Liam, I guess. How much of a focus do we need to be having on ensuring we have cash gen options? If you've got a couple of DNPs or rookies that haven't performed well on your bench, do we need to be trading bench trades for cash gen options now, or is that a bit of a waste? Where do you sit with that?
I think that it is a tough question. I don't know if we're going to know what the right answer is, because it's hard to project forward what quality of cash generators we're going to have from this week onwards, because quite often it starts to thin out basically from now, the players that rock up. I do think though that this week and the low scoring in both defenders and forwards show that if you don't prioritize at least some cash generation, you're going to end up with more 40s and 50s on field by the time we get to week 6, 7, 8, and other people who've at least tried to have a hybrid strategy of potentially sidewaysing some, you know, more expensive options to players who have a double game week while still looking to make at least one upgrade trade per week are going to have a far better team. And that the easiest way to grease that wheel is by still having cash generation going. I think though that what I learned last year, and obviously that may only be true for last year, is once you see a player have a pop score, trade them out and get that cash immediately in. Yep. Because of the way this game works, it comes in as fast as it leaves. So you've really just got to be willing to cut your losses and get rid of rookies whilst they've got cash on their head.
So, Jono, if you've got five players currently that are playing double in round four, are you looking your trade outs the round after that, short of injuries or something bad happening, to be mostly getting rid of those round four players?
Yeah, absolutely. Almost exclusively. My logic is once they've had theirs, I want to make sure that I've got as many players throughout the next 4 weeks having two games. And so once they've had their two games, I think there is, unless they're an absolute champion. So for example, whenever Marinoff has her round, I'm not trading
seven.
You know, it's a while away, but that, you know, if it was this week, I'd still be holding her because I know she can put up these mammoth scores. But yep. Someone like a Benici, I might be looking to move on. A slasher, I'll be willing to move on. I think most of these types of players, where they're just not going to score as much for the rest of the season as everyone else on the basis that they've got one fewer game to do it in.
A question then for the pair of you. Jess Hosking, currently sitting at D4 for me. I think that there's a very real world where I have to consider trading her out because I might just get two 30s. And I know that both Finn and Watson can score more than that. I know that it's going to be a popular trade query this week. A player going into their double game week, how important is it to trade them to, like, what are the options? You can trade them to someone who also has a double game week this week or push it out. In the case of Hosking, would you be looking to trade to someone who has a double game week this week, or would you be willing to trade it to someone who plays later?
For me, if a player is deeply, like, this is the approach I'm taking, if they're very frustrating to me and I don't want them on my field, I don't really care if they've got a double week coming up, they are going to go, because a lot of my enjoyment around this game comes from liking watching who I've got in my side. So that's why Hosking left for me. I know she has a double week next week, but I was like, I'm not going to hold her through it. She's got to go. I'd rather bring in someone and hurt my double rounds a bit more and enjoy watching it. So I think, and I brought her in for someone that I think can get the same as a double Hosking, which is Sheeran. So I think that that's probably the approach I would take. What about you, Jono?
Yeah, I am hesitant as a, just because even if she puts up a 30 both weeks, that's a 60. That's the worst case scenario that you're going to get from a Jess Hosking. And a 60 for most players we would compliment, right? So in that line in particular. So, you know, the best case scenario, even if it's a small chance, is enough of something for me to hold. The thing that I would worry about is someone like Hosking might lose a lot of money because their price is going to move twice this week.
Yeah.
So that's the main concern. On that basis, I think it'd be fine to move Hosking on, but I would try to stick to someone on the same round if you didn't have a number of options.
Yeah, and that is kind of what I'm looking at doing, which is to go, you know, considering in defense a Jordy Allen or a Nat Grider, for example, as defenders. Or we talked a lot about Georgia Stathis as defensive trade-in options, and just hope and hope that, you know, break evens have settled such that I'm not going to lose extra cash.
So let's say that Hosking, who had got, like, instead of getting, say, a 45 or so, whatever her average is, somewhere around there, gets two lots of 45. So her average, so her score becomes 90. Does that mean her price is going to go up as if she's suddenly achieved 90?
No, her price is going to go down as if she scored 45 and then down as if she scored 45 the following week. That's how it would work.
Yeah, it's as though there's like two price movements.
Yeah, so if you're expecting her to score poorly and you're worried about the cash loss, then that's absolutely enough of a reason to trade. It really, this is where it comes down to team dependency, because if you're in, say, your position where you've only got one player on the week, it would be very hard to trade out a Hosking and not go to someone else with the same double week. Otherwise, you'll just have no one scoring twice this week.
Yes.
Having said yes, that, indeed. I do think that this is the last round where everyone has a double week ahead. So it's more important next week. I think this week you're still fixing your team. And it's next week that you shouldn't be trading into a Brisbane, Collingwood, West Coast or Bulldog player.
I agree with that. And then in terms of trading in a captain, I like the idea that Noffy can go huge and Rowbottom can go huge regardless versus some potentially more variable other elite options in Anderson or some even more variable options in like a Bonici or a Davey. I kind of like sticking with Marinov because it makes my life easy. But what do you guys think in about what score do you need from a Marinov or a Rowbottom to not want to captain them or to make it more worthwhile to trade in or to captain someone in a double round?
I would say that you would need to have a player in the double game week who you don't think can score more than 65 twice. Because that's if you get that, it's 130, right? And then you times that by two, it's a 260. That's what most people got from their captains this week in Rowbottom and Marinov. So you've got to have almost nothing to be able to choose from. So like I've got Pritchard and Bonici at the moment as captainable options. Pritchard's scored above that 65 mark every week of the first 3 weeks. Bonici didn't score it this week, but then it had two decent scores before then. So on that basis, I think that it's a priority of having someone who at least can go above 70. And this week is really unfortunate because there's only one player who is averaging above 100 coming into this of the four double game week teams. Whereas next week, it's going to be North Melbourne. You're going to have Richmond's option. So you've got top liners in forward, defence, midfield, and one of the better scoring rucks at the moment as well. You're going to have Carlton who have midfielders who can all pop 100-plus score. And then who's the last team who has their double game week in week five? Port Adelaide. So we know that there are players that can score well on a given week. They're not as consistent, but I just think that this week is maybe the one week where you just have to be willing to cop a, say you're like me, a Pritchard as your first up option.
Yep. Well, that's cleared up a lot of things for me about what I'm going to do. Do you guys have any additional bits you want to add?
My question would be, if you don't have Anderson and you don't have Bonici, Liam, how important do you think it is to trade into one of those players right now?
Yeah, it's really tough because both of them looked well below par from what I've seen. Now, I've only watched the highlights from that game, so I need to actually go back and watch it. Sadly, we had some weird wedding on at the time that the game was happening, which is just outrageous scheduling.
Yeah, why would you put it on during the footy season? It's wild. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I need to go back and watch it, but Anderson spent some time off injured in the first quarter, and it now seems potentially like Bell Dawes may have copped an injury. I want to go back and see because I think the other player that we need to talk about, the best scorer from all of these teams, well, outside of Ali Drennan, is Bree Davey, who scored a 110, had 22 touches and 10 tackles and kicked a goal. I think trading in at least one player this week, if you don't already have them, that you think on a normal day could score 100 or more would be a priority for me.
I'm actually thinking neither of those, and I'm going to go back to what you mentioned before, which is Pritchard, because she's looked really good. I'm spewing that I didn't have her to start with. I'm very envious of your pick there. Risky, paid off. And now with a potentially sorer Blackburn, the only other person.
Oh, yeah. That's the one player that we haven't talked about. We've just glossed over the fact that she's not playing. But, yeah, it's a big thing that Ellie B's probably broken something in her foot and said on commentary she might be out for a bit.
Which means don't trade her in.
No, do not.
Your captain
do
choice.
Not trade in Ellie Blackburn.
You know what? In fact, you should trade her out. That's the advice
that is,
of this podcast.
That is the most important advice. So if you've got Ellie Blackburn, who are you trading her to?
Pritchard.
Pritchard's not a bad option. I would do Pritchard or Roberts.
Yeah, that's the other one. That's the one I'm very actively considering this week. She looked really good. The only question is she's got the Brisbane matchup, and that's the problem with for both West Coast and Western Bulldogs midfielders. Brisbane are the toughest midfield matchup in the competition by the length of the Flemington straight.
Yeah. So then, if you go Collingwood, you avoid that.
Yeah. Can I like pose something to both of you? And that's something that I've been thinking about, and I don't think we're going to get a concrete answer because it's already one of the most underreported parts of the AFLW. resting players, both in-game and from games in the double game weeks. How concerned are you that it will happen?
So concerned. I've been thinking about it all
I'm
season.
I'm petrified.
I assume clubs are going to be making mass changes during these weeks. So
particularly for younger players, I reckon.
Yeah. I'm honestly looking at teams that have long injury lists like Collingwood because they can't do this. Like something like someone like Grace Campbell or Bree Davey, they're never going to get rested because they have no one else. You know, they'll be playing top-up players.
Yeah.
Where Anderson makes me nervous given how many times she was rested for the Pracky and the whatever the other one was, the scratch match.
Mm. And has two easy games against, you know, bottom, you know, teams that were well down the ladder last year. And I do actually think as well that it might be that players don't rest the entire game, but I expect if they've got the capacity to play in a second position, particularly if they can rest forward as a midfielder, they will probably be doing more of that. So that's my concern for Bree Davey in particular, adding to the fact that she's the size and shape of a forward and has shown capability as a forward in the past, and Collingwood suck at kicking goals at the moment.
Yeah, I would say Collingwood are in a different position to Brisbane, though, because Collingwood look like these might be two of their only wins of the season. They need these wins. So if she's not in the middle 100% of the time until that win is locked away, I would be surprised.
I just think that I know that there are more midfielders on Collingwood's list that I think can play out a game than there are forwards.
Mm. That's true.
Yeah, we saw Campbell and McCann have big games in the preseason when Bonici wasn't there.
Just shorten Michaela Cann to McCann?
I heard that too. I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was
That's
the best.
That's great. McCann. I love it.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Ah, McCann, you've done it again. Oh, yes.
Oh, Lord.
Well, moving on then.
Actually, before we shift off, I've got another thing. I'm sorry. We talked about it before, and I think it's worth mentioning. You've got Ebony Marinoff, and you've got Charlie Rowbottom, and you've got who have later double game weeks, who sit at over $1.5 million. Ebony Marinoff's going to be over $1.85 million. Would you consider downgrading to another premium midfielder, banking upwards of 300-400k to allow for an upgrade elsewhere on field with the prospect that you're getting her back later on? Because I know that it's a plan that people will explore to maximize if they're going to get double ups on double game weeks, making sure that it's from their higher scoring players so as to maximize the effect of playing two games.
That is a hard no from me. I think that is a bad idea. Because this season is not just about the 4 weeks where we have double games. It's about the rounds 8, 9, 10 after that. And to be impactful in those games, you're going to want to have a Rowbottom and a Marinoff. And it feels unlikely that you'll be able to afford them again, given how large these price jumps are. If you've already got those players, and this is from someone that has traded Bowers in twice last season, so can confirm, not a good idea. If you've got them, like, don't fuck with your primos is the strategy we talked about a lot last year. I would stick with that. It's not worth trading them out. I'm happy to be wrong later, but I would highly recommend people don't do that.
Yeah, it's probably more of a soft no from me, but it's still a no. Yeah, I just, it's the same reason. It's, you're not going to be able to get them back in. And it's just a ceiling that no player has the consistency of ceiling that Marinoff and Rowbottom have. You know, it's every week, and it's just when it's so hard to afford them in the first place. You know, how are you going to chase them down later with limited trades?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for if you're embracing a strategy of sidewaysing premiums, then if you trade out Rowbottom this week, you're trading in Rowbottom in 2 weeks and sidewaysing the premium that you might have bought in. So let's say you bring in Garner or Riddell or Conti, and you, particularly if it's, say, to a Conti, you bank 200k, 250k, and then you're banking on the ability to be able to trade her in 2 weeks.
Assuming that Primo you've traded in doesn't get rested and has two very good games, so it doesn't go down in price.
Like, absolutely. But it's like, you know, you would be doing it for players that you feel confident are long-term capable scorers. Like, that's part of the trade-off of it all. I'm not a strong no, I'm not a soft no. I'm a maybe. I think that we may get to the end of this season and see a world where the strategy that wins it is a very aggressive, just rolling through double game week midfielders the entire time.
It's Mim Strom as captain.
It's the aggressive strategy, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, the reason why we spent this good chunk of time going through some of the strategies is we won't be doing this again every week, but what we do probably need to sit down and have a good hard think about: who are we trading in? How long are we going to hold them for? Which weeks are they for? How many players do we have in the next bye week? How many of those are we going to hold after their bye week because we think they're going to be top five or someone we want to keep in our team versus just a short-term play? So we've got a lot to think about. So now it's probably time to talk through some trade targets. We've spoken a lot about the players from the double rounds that we might be looking to get in, especially me, having only one at the moment. But there's lots of other really interesting players that aren't playing twice next week. And, you know, as Jono says, this is the time to be fixing up your team. So in terms of the areas we should be looking, the Giants just lost three players to injury in that last round of the week that we just came off watching. Who does that make attractive for you guys? I personally like Pauga mostly because I already have her. As most
no
people have traded
in
her
that
out.
Choice at all.
And she spent a lot of time as a like inside midfielder in that game. She was around the ball, she was having great impact, she was very quiet for some parts, but when she was on field, she looked fantastic. What do you guys think?
I just want to say that Michaela Pounder had 0 points in the second half, which was a little concerning.
I didn't watch the second half.
Well, you missed out on a barnstorming finish, to be honest. It was an absolutely awesome end to the game. I'm a noted fan of this player, but Tani Evans look excellent in defence because, of course, she does. That's where she should be playing. And losing Cambridge McCormick means that they are down an intercepting defender and they are down a bit of height. And funnily enough, Tani Evans has both of those things. Unfortunately, she hasn't lost as much cash as I would have hoped. So I think she will have hit her break even this week. Not by a ridiculous amount. Sorry, I got sidetracked by the fact that Mel just bonked her own nose trying to pick up her microphone as it fell off the table.
I hit it and I was like, good, it didn't fall. And I went to carry on what I was doing and then I hit it again and then it fully fell off. Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Well, Mel's obviously very intent on hearing about my thoughts on Tani Evans. Yeah, I thought she looked excellent. I thought she looked like the top five defender that she was last year. When she was playing high time on ground role in defence, and 96% time on ground for a 75, had a great third quarter where GWS started to try and really bleed the clock because they were down rotations, had 27 points. Great score build, great player to target.
Yeah, I agree. And Jono, thoughts on Beck Beeson?
Yeah, so this is one where I think Nicola Barr went down and it looks like she's done a hamstring and quite
bad.
High up.
So bad.
Yeah, so she could be out for quite some time. So I know that Nicola Barr wasn't getting a lot of CBAs, but I do think she was sort of transitioning as a midfielder between the arcs after the ball had been bounced. And so that's going to bring a few more opportunities in the middle. Beck Beeson was absolutely elite. I think she stood up massively in a game where they were really struggling to hold on with those legs. My favorite moment in the whole match, to be honest, came when Rowbottom just bodied someone into the ground and Beeson, as the captain, has stepped in and tried to shove Rowbottom, put so much energy into it, not moved her at all, but you know, the heart was there, which I love to see. So I think she's one that's really going to do well. I think Parker as well. We know that over the next few weeks, if there's less depth in the team, they're going to have high minutes in the midfield and they're not going to be rested for their 4 days between games. So that's something that I'm looking forward to.
It's just unfortunate that they have such a late double game week. So it doesn't really help your balance. It would have been good if this game had happened maybe in like round five, round six, and then we could have made some attacking plays for an Evans, for a Beeson, for a Parker, for a Zali, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably more excited about the change that's going to be happening at Carlton. Well, the change that has happened at Carlton is probably a better way of putting it, because Mimi Hill has gone from one of the most important midfielders they have to she spent the first 2 weeks playing mostly off halfback, and then this week almost exclusively in the forward line. And to be honest, she looked really at home in that Geelong game. She was a great target inside 50. I think she had a bunch of score involvements and was a massive reason why they were able to score in such dour conditions. And it really opened up the role for Maddie Guerin to have arguably the best game of her career.
So, I wouldn't even argue.
I mean, maybe the week before where she kicked the winning goal is the only thing that I could potentially say was better. But
yeah,
she was enormous. And whilst I don't think she's going to put up 116 every week, if she can go 70 to 80, I think that's value enough for me to go sideways from Syme and honestly just let the price rise, particularly with the buy next week or the double round next week.
The double game next week, yeah.
Yeah. Guerin's someone I'll be looking at next week because I am playing these trades 1 week at a time and I need to focus on
that
round
you
four.
Are, that you are.
But yes, very impressive.
Break even of 18, unfortunately.
Ooh, nice. So unfortunately, what do you mean?
Going to go up. Well, that means she's going to have gone up 237k
this week.
Yeah, but that's all approximate stuff, right?
All right, then I will upgrade Syme to Maddie.
Upgrade Syme to Maddie Guerin. This is the problem. Ouch. She's in an awkward price bracket now.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll do it again, and then I can get it a week after from.
It's possible, if unlikely.
What about Geelong on the other side of that game?
Okay, I think that, and we talked about this with Will, because I think he's clearly watched this game. That was the worst Geelong have looked for a very long time. They did not look at all like they'd shown up to play. It looks like they'd massively underestimated Carlton, and fair enough, Carlton haven't exactly strung together many great kind of dominant wins, and that's basically what this was. It was a 29-5, 30 more disposals, more center clearances, you know, 40 more hit outs, like a full domination. And it also showed in their ball movement, which was horrific. Like it honestly, like they decided, nah, we're not going to try and create width. We're just going to hoof it down long, down the line all the time. And give Breanne Moody and Celine Moody the ability to bring the ball to ground and we'll just beat you guys back going the other way. The one player that I thought looked great in the second half, and it was a move that I think has been coming for a while, is Aisling Maloney. Got moved into the ruck, scored 40 points in the second half of her 48 points. And I think that that's a move that ought to have come earlier. Now, she's not a dominant hit-out player ever, and I haven't got the ruck contest numbers, but I think that her athleticism and now her price, which is not going to be outrageous, makes her a target.
She's someone that was coming into the season in good form too. I liked what she was doing in the practice matches. So it was just that tough early couple fixtures, which scared me off her with Melbourne into North Melbourne. But I really thought the Carlton matchup was one she was going to dominate. And it was that second half that was more tempting because the ball just didn't make it anywhere near their forward line.
No, it wasn't even close.
Yeah, but hopefully that's an anomaly. And now that she's passed a tough matchup and surely Geelong will rock up next week, then she's could be a good one to jump on now. Especially if you're looking like a Pauga or a Hodder or someone else that you've got in your forward line that you're not loving over.
The other one that they desperately need back is Georgie Prasparkas because they were running players like Abby McDonald through the middle. And, I mean, Prasparkas has gone down, 300k already? And it was a laid out. If she comes back in and she looks fit and ready to go, I think she's going to make a lot of money very quickly back.
On the topic of players that have lost a heap of cash, Meg McDonald has put up a 38 on the weekend, which is her highest score of the year, but I still think she was down at like 318k going into last week. That's another player where I do wonder if she's carrying an injury because she had only 61% time on ground for the captain versus other defenders, Anna Rose Kennedy, Beck Webster, Kearns, Emmonson, all of whom had over 90% time on ground.
This is just bringing me back to when I theorized in the practice match that she'd done her ACL. And it turned out it was cramp. But maybe
it was a cramp.
I was right, and she's just playing without one.
And she hasn't noticed.
She's forgotten to. I didn't put my ACL in this morning. It's lost with my keys.
Well, we'll find out after the season. Who knows? You know.
Oh gosh. And then some of the other trading options that we've kind of alluded to already, because they're in the double game rounds, but not necessarily your captain options. We've got Nat Grider as a defender, which she had a big week. I'm not sure if that's going to happen again necessarily, but I think she's a good looking.
What I've done with these, Mel, is I've made sure that there's someone for every line. And I think if you're looking for a defender from any of these four teams, I don't think there's a better one than Nat Grider out there.
Correct.
So if you've got Jess Hosking that you have to move on, and for some reason you have to find a defender, I think she's one that the Lions love, that transition footy around the back, and against really poor teams generally, when they're dominating matches, they just rack them up. They just rack them up around halfback, and Nat Grider gets involved. So unless you've got a better option from any of those four teams this week, I think this is the one I would jump on.
I'm 100% considering it. My only issue is that 97 on the weekend came with 10 tackles. Now, I don't know if there's going to be 10 tackles to lay in defence this coming week.
Because the ball spent so much time in Collingwood's forward line during that smashing on Friday.
Like, it's more that I would say that Collingwood are a more capable side than the Western Bulldogs are, and probably West Coast, and who are both kind of far more difficult matchups for defenders, or low-scoring matchups for defenders, because the ball doesn't get that far.
Yeah, I think she's a really good pick. I think you just want to be a little bit careful, though, because she's going to go up in price so much and Hosking is going to go down. So she's someone you'll have to step up to quite a chunk there. But definitely the best of the options, I'd say. In the midfield, we've got Pritchard, who we've already spoken about, who I'm quite keen on. Ella Roberts, who, Liam, you're seriously considering. I think that was you. Dee Berry, another option there.
Yeah, I've put down Berry because I think the captain is the most likely to come in as the Blackburn replacement. It's baffled me that she went from, you know, announcement of captain of the club and playing midfield role in the preseason to just completely dropping out of that midfield in the first 2 weeks. So if Blackburn is out, I would have thought she's a likely candidate to step in. So given the price point, it would be a very, very high risk option this week. But
given she didn't score for three quarters last week.
Yeah, absolutely. It was so quiet on the weekend. But I think there's a chance there. This is a player who has played for a long time, has the history behind them to show they can do it. So
makes sense. I hope to see it. And then Grace Campbell as a forward option from Collingwood.
High quality players putting up the scores.
Awesome. Well, that's more than enough trade targets, whether you are a sucker like me who needs more players from the bye round, or you get to really set up your team this week, like Jono and Liam. So I think it's time to move on to rookie roulette and have a think about who we are cashing out to be able to afford some of these players. We've spoken a lot about bringing in the rookies to begin with, and do we believe what we're seeing, but now's the time to start enjoying that price rise. Are you guys thinking of trading out any rookies this week?
Yeah. I'm probably going to grease the wheels of my trades with a Saatchi Syme downgrade. It's the most likely for me.
Yep, I'm doing exactly the same. And there's a small chance that I also move Matea Breed on.
Yeah.
Ooh, no. Okay. Well, Jono, do you want to run us through some of the other players that you think we should be trading out?
Yeah, there's a few players here that are quite highly owned that are ran through, and I just think their cash looks to have stalled. So Montana Baroldson is quite highly owned in the forward line, and after a 20 on the weekend, that price is going to start going down very quickly. Lawson Tavern in the back line for Carlton is also a key defender that I think overperformed early, and you should take that cash and run. Ainsley Kemp, very similar at the Hawks, had a very good first 2 weeks. But a 19 is much closer to what I would expect her to do for the foreseeable future. Two, I think, more interesting options Brooke Boileau and Michaela Pauger, because we've talked up these players a lot. We know that they have the potential for the high scoring. To start with Brooke Boileau, she actually got dropped this week. But I think we have seen a substantial injury from Eloise Jones, and she might come back in. In the interest of not holding a red dot, would you move her on, or would you hold if she comes back in?
I would be getting rid of her.
I think it depends. If you don't have a red dot, she's one that you could hold. And then if she plays, she makes you money. If she doesn't, she's a nice red dot for a loophole. But if you've already got another red dot, like EK Smith would be a popular one, you've deliberately traded in a red dot for a loophole, then you don't want more than one. I would be capitalizing on the gain she's made and getting her out.
Yeah. How about Michaela Pauger? Are you going to move her on?
I'm probably not going to look to move her on, if only because I do think that there will be probably some more midfield time available to her. And I'm still, again, not enamored by the forward targets. The one possibility is Grace Campbell. If you've got Michaela Pauger, getting in an extra double game week player in Campbell, who we know loves a tackle, and Colin would have so many injuries that unlikely to be a player to get rested, kind of sits in that butter zone of has played enough AFLW seasons that she's got the fitness based but not so important to a team that's doing incredibly and has finals aspirations that they might look to not overload her.
Yeah, I think for me, she's going to end up being my Ella Heads of this season, which is a player that I constantly want to trade out, but never really, it's not pressing enough. So she just stays with me from start to finish. I'm anticipating that now. Wonderful. Because I like that idea to Campbell. That makes a lot of sense. But I feel like I've got bigger priorities for my trades this week. So she'll probably stay there again. Maybe we'll see after GWS's bye round. One I am probably thinking, though, is one of the Port Adelaide midfielders, because I have three and I need some cash. I think Goody and who's the other one?
Window.
That I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Window. Goody and Window seem to be substituting each other. But Wendland has been a bit more consistent, but also a little bit lower, I think. So I think Wendland, as much as I enjoy watching her play the most, I would say, I believe it's time for her to move on to get me some cash. And then I'll just stick with Goody and Window for now.
Yep.
But there's a lot of other holds. I mean, O'Dowd definitely a hold after that performance. Tripodi a hold for sure. Finn, yeah, she can stay. Watson, I mean, that was a big week.
Chuck on field
maybe, but she can stay. And I'd agree that Goody and Window can also stay if you have them, unless you're looking for a cash gen option, in which case they've made a bucket load. You might kick yourself a little bit later if they keep going up, but if you need some cash to get in a good position for these buy rounds, then they're okay.
The question on holding that I have for you two, I'm really struggling with the idea of, do I need a red dot so that I can VC my captain option each week and then hold on to someone else for the remainder of the rounds? So this is a player like Ella K. Smith or Kate Lutkins, preferably not Lutkins this week, given she'll also lock in quite early, but someone that can allow me to do that. Or is it more important to keep the cash gen going?
I would say that you're only trading in a red dot if you know that they are guaranteed not to play. So we saw that Lily Pierce, Ruck, Geelong, guaranteed not playing this year, did her ACL. I'm very concerned this week, if I were to captain Ella K. Smith, that she might come back in. At which point, I won't find out until I've already gotten locked into who my VC and C are, if I want to take it from a double game week player.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do about that? Are you going to trade her to another red dot?
No, I'm not going to try to look to VC loophole. I will probably just have to go a straight up captain. Or I VC Tuesday and then assess if I need to let, you know, for whatever reason, it might be downgrading someone from the second double game week to a 300k rookie who's about to play two games, or I might look to trade in a red dot later so that I would be able to take it on the Wednesday night. But that's gonna be tough to choose. But I also think as well, if you've got any more than one red dot on your team, I'd be very worried. We already saw this week, I know that a bunch of people will have copped donuts because Izzy Huntington was a late out with knee soreness and Ella K. Smith had been dropped. So a lot of people will have been locked into it. So just a word of warning, like there are definite concerns.
Yeah, I wouldn't be trading one in. Personally, I'm quite risk averse with this whole thing. If EK Smith conveniently gets dropped and stays dropped, that's nice. I'll use her, but I need her to definitely be dropped before I try to do any mucking around, because it would be classic me to accidentally get her score as captain. So avoiding that. What about some of the other rookies, Jono?
Yeah, so I mean, we've got to go down, and it's very hard at the moment because we don't know what the prices are. But I think if we're not talking about going up to someone expensive like a Matty Geerin, then the cheap options that I'm looking at this week, I thought Di Donato on debut for the Eagles looked very good. I liked Mackenzie mm-hmm. Ford at Richmond, and I think she'll probably get another crack. Gisele Davies, if Ali Morfitt doesn't get recalled this week, I think is a very good forward option who could keep putting up 40 scores, just having all that midfield time. And Maddie Collier on her return from concussion put up a 32, but I think she's got a higher ceiling than that. So those are probably the players that I would be targeting across the various lines.
Yeah, out of those, I most like Di Donato. I think she didn't. There's quite a few rookies at West Coast, but I think she did enough to get herself a repeat play in that team.
Yeah.
And she looked really good out there.
It's also handy having the two games to get the price really moving all at once.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to trade her in this week.
Yeah, on top of Ramos, the one player that I also thought looked good and also obviously a good matchup, but Megan Gaffney, 300k forward from GWS. Very small, but was getting decently high up the ground. So, you know, we've talked about how many injuries they've just had. She may actually have some degree of job security. So it's an option I'd look at, but I think Davis is the better option. She's just a fair bit more expensive, but she'll be above 400k by the time lockout lifts.
Great. Let's head on over to the captain's corner. Liam, what have you got for us?
I won't go on too long in this conversation because we've talked about a lot of these options already, but I would say that Ali Anderson with West Coast and Western Bulldogs, most likely captain option. And then Britt Bonici at 2, given she's got the same West Coast Western Bulldogs. We've talked about Collingwood injuries. She's probably not going to get rested. Ella Roberts is my third best. She's got Collingwood, and I think she could have a really, really good score there, but also has Brisbane. And then number 4 for me is Izzy Pritchard. My reasoning is I think I know what Ella Roberts is going to look like in almost every game that she plays. She's an incredibly talented player, and it shows in multiple phases of the game around the ground. I don't know what Izzy Pritchard looks like in a midfield without Ellie Blackburn. I think it will be good, but there is a reason. Like, I do think there are times that she gets a little passive around stoppages sometimes, and if there's not an Ellie being able to win or corral and keep the ball around a stoppage, she may not pop as much as we'd like. So I'm nervous.
Rats.
I'm excited, but I'm definitely nervous that it could actually be worse for Pritchard having Ellie Blackburn leave the team.
That's a good point.
And then my fifth option is Bree Davey, because as I said, I think she would be higher if I didn't have the concern about her playing forward. Even if she does have good matchups, she can definitely go missing at times. And I also think that if she does have a pop score one week, she is one of the, you know, handful of players where if they have one good game of form, the next team is like, well, we have to tag her because she has that game-breaking ability. So that's my reason for having her slightly lower. Another name to consider is Ali Drennan, who decided that after having a great score in round one, getting no CBAs the game after and scoring 30-odd points, then proceeded to score 132. So just a name. If you've got her, you're one of the few people that do. She was incredible.
For the 1.18% that have her, you could consider captaining her as your sixth best option.
Yeah, well, I just thought I had to mention it. It was a ridiculous, like, I think it was, what, a top 5 score for the round? It was outrageous. Yeah,
second highest, I'm pretty sure. 134.
Ali Drennan. Yeah, it was outrageous.
But she scored 100 points more than the week before. Like, that is absurd inconsistency.
It's dumb. Dumb.
I do not like it. I don't want
Sam,
anything
I am.
To
I do not
that.
Like it. Yes, those exactly. are captain options. It may, you know, move throughout the week. And then otherwise, I'd say if you've not got any of those options and you haven't got a single person you want to score on the double game week, I think Ebony Marinoff, great matchup. Charlie Rowbottom, great matchup. And I would also say Laura Gardner could go huge this week up against a depleted GWS.
Yeah, actually, that's true. She's someone who's really overlooked this season, but... Yeah,
she'll get more relevant
soon.
Just in
comparison to last season, I guess.
She'll definitely pop in relevance soon when she gets closer to round six, week six.
Looking forward to it. Well, maybe we should have a review of our trade plans. Lockout is still not open, so this is all just on assumptions of where prices go. I could be sorely disappointed when I realise that I can't afford to do this, but we'll see. My current thinking is that, well, my priority, week four, as I mentioned like 100 times already. So, Chaplin, don't ask me how that happened. Chaplin out.
It's a very male
sometimes
thing
I like
to
do
have.
Impromptu bad trades and just not tell anyone about it. Chaplin out to, I'm thinking Thomas, that gives me another one for next week. Nanscorn out. To Pritchard, similar price. As much as I love watching Nanscorn in her long sleeves, need another player. And then I'm thinking, I don't know which one, probably Wendlin, but Wendlin or maybe Window, so I don't have to keep benching the wrong great Port Adelaide rookie. One of those two out. And I'm thinking I fill my utility. I haven't quite figured out how this works, but maybe I really want to get in Di Donato, but I don't know if I want to do another defender trade. Or maybe it's Chaplin to Di Donato and I just get something else somewhere. That's all I've got. But my point of weakness is that I have to resist the urge to trade out Slicer because she's been underperforming and I get really frustrated when that happens. And then last minute, I'm like, you know what? We're not doing this for another week. Out you go. But she's currently the only player I have playing two games next week, so I need to not do that. And I can do that the week after.
You get to trade her out next week. It's not so far.
I just got to wait. Just wait one more week and then I can do what I want to do. What about you guys? Jono?
Yeah, I'm looking at trying to maximize my cash, keep that cash gen going. So I think Sashi Syme topped out. I'm going to try and find a way to get her on to Maddie Guerin. And then Ash Saint is hopefully going to be moving to Grace Campbell just to keep that going. Ash Saint's been very disappointing.
I like that.
At the moment, I could afford that on current prices. But once lockout lifts... I'm going to be needing a lot of money. So I'm assuming that that means that I move Matea Breed on to afford that. But we will see. We will see if that's enough very soon.
And Liam?
I will be considering a trade out of Sarah Hosking to get another week four double game week defender. So it could be Grider, could be Geordie Allen. It just depends on where my money lands. I've got no cash left whatsoever. And then beyond that, I think it's just going to be assessing. I have some concerns potentially about Mon Conti. And if I want to make a trade to potentially reconfigure my buy plans, it could be bringing in a North player preparing for next week. I'm really not sure what my trades are going to be this week, but almost all of it will be financed by Sachi Syme down to a basement or near basement rookie so that I can actually have some cash to make those trades.
Might I suggest Riddell?
You can.
She's gone pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Recently. No, that's not smug at all. Thank you. I hadn't considered Ash Riddell, player I started last year and championed. I'll add her to my list. Thank you.
Just in case you forgot about it. No, because I'm not a sore winner whatsoever, so that's okay. Stay tuned for when I don't join next week because I've lost. Anyway, let's wrap up here. You can find us, Free Kick, wherever you get your podcasts, on either our Free Kick stream or the official AFLW Fantasy Podcast stream. We are Free Kick W Pod on YouTube, Twitter, and Insta. Liam, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at LiamAFLWFantasy.
And you can find me, Jono, on Twitter as well, at FreeKickJono.
I'm on Twitter as FreeKickMel. We've got an article coming out on the AFLW website later this week, as well as a Spaces happening probably Thursday, I think is the current plan.
Yeah.
But, you know, first week of the bye week, so we'll have to see how that goes.
I just want to give a quick reminder to everyone that the reason we are releasing this a little bit earlier this week is that the week four games that are happening on Tuesday and Wednesday this week, players from those teams will lock out when those games start for the whole week. So if you are trading in a Collingwood, West Coast, Brisbane Lions or Western Bulldogs player, you have been warned.
Mm. Nice. Cool. Okay, so we'll talk to you all later. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.